Part 2, Chapter 8, in which disconsolate distress is disarmed by the disappearance of distance in a dismal district. Quote, fair isle, that from the fairest of all flowers thy gentlest of all names dost take, how many memories of radiant hours at sight of thee and thine at once awake, how many scenes of what departed bliss, how many thoughts of what entombed hopes, how many visions of a maiden that is no more, no more upon thy verdant slopes, no more, alas, that magical sad sound transforming all, thy charms shall please no more, thy memory no more. Accursed ground, henceforth I hold thy flower-enameled shore. O hyacinthine isle, O purple zante, Isola d'oro, fior di Levante. Edgar Allan Poe, Sonnet to Sante. At 6 minutes past 8 o'clock, Mahogany awoke to the double pain of sunburn and heartache. Fortunately, the skin on his back had not been burned, and, leaving the front unbuttoned, he was able to wear a light shirt. He went to the terrace for breakfast and found Laura and Harvey at one of the tables. She had just explained to the captain that her busy schedule required that she fly to Rome for a private party, and that they would never meet again. "Ouch!" said Laura. "What was that?" said Harvey. "One of those damned mosquitoes," said Laura. It was not, however, a mosquito, but rather the dastardly work of Aphrodite. She had sent her son to ease Mahogany's suffering by making him fall in love with another woman. But, just as the little archer was poising himself to strike, a gust of wind had caught his wings and thrown him off balance. As a result, his arrow missed Mahogany and struck Laura. Though it did not slice her aorta, nor continue to the bottom of her heart, it did graze her breast and lodge securely in her loins. And as it did, she lost her desire to return to the high life of Italy and decided to stay with Harvey instead. "Come to Zante," she said. "It is a rugged island, but it breeds brave men." And so they went. Laura's villa was at the north end of the island, near a place called the Blue Grotto, and its beauty was stunning. Around the home stood a thick wood of alder, poplar, and cypress, in which all kinds of birds had made their nests, and there was a grapevine growing luxuriantly about the gate of the entrance, fed by 4 rills of water cut in channels. The rivulets turned hither and thither, irrigating the beds of violets and herbage over which they flowed, and Laura called them by name. Phlegethon was the warmest, bubbling up from the earth and bringing rich minerals from the soil. Styx and Lethe flowed off of Phlegethon and roamed about the garden, and Cocytus caught the water of the other three, carrying its now cold sludge back to the world below. Inside, the villa was equally attractive. The first floor was announced by a large vestibule with an enormous mirror. To the left was the dining room, and behind it the kitchen. To the right was the drawing room, and, next to it, a magnificent marble staircase. The stairs led to an expansive split-level hall on the second floor that gave access to a set of bedrooms on each side and opened at the north end to a balcony overlooking the coast. Still in pain from his day in the sun, Mahogany went to lie down, while Harvey followed his hostess to the balcony. As soon as they stepped outside, it began to rain, and Harvey and Laura ducked back inside to Laura's bedroom. O Circe, Calypso, Clytemnestra, whose hand is this that draws our captain into her cave of passion. As soon as they sat on the bed, the gods gave the signal. The lightning flashed, the skies shuddered, Hymen shrieked, and the vault of heaven felt the mortal surge. Mahogany, napping in the room across the hall, heard the groans of the two lovers and believed them to be the wailings of the dead in the underworld. Shortly thereafter, he imagined his feet starting down a rocky path, and he saw a man who looked like Roland Twelves. "Che fai in questa fossa?" asked the spirit. Footnote: Dante Inferno, Canto 17, line 66. What are you doing in this grave? "Dear author and seer of all things," said Mahogany, "I know not in what sense or by what manner I have come to this kingdom, but if I may speak without deceit, I will tell you why. I have come for Adelphine, that precious flower whose growing years were taken by a raven's conceit. I have wanted to bear her loss. I have tried, but love has conquered. So tell me, if you will, how I may see that courteous Mantuan, whose fame of beauty still endures in the world, and shall endure as long as the world shall last." "There is a way," replied the wraith, "that leads steep down to the palace of Dis." Footnote: the city of Dis is the bottommost region of Dante's underworld. Again, "There is a way," replied the wraith, "that leads steep down to the palace of Dis. You have traveled far and suffered much, and your journey will not be in vain. But the way is treacherous, and you must heed my words and proceed with measured step. First, cut a cluster of grapes, not unlike those you once shared with Adelphine, from the vine at the entrance to the villa. Then, follow the rivulet Phlegethon to where it runs into Cocytus and descends into the earth. Then, and only then, will you be allowed passage from this world to the next. Then, and only then, will you see the one you love with other visions of ineffable dread. May the gods guide you, my friend, and may you return healthy and without worry to the life you now leave." Walking as if in a dream, Mahogany went to the transom and cut the grapes from the vine. Then he followed the river Cocytus and began to descend. As he moved through the shadows, he was struck by the smell of primordial mud. It was in his nostrils, like the high stillness of a primordial forest. Then he saw a vision more horrible than any he had ever seen.
"Aiutami, Rolando! Siamo arrivati all'ultimo circolo dell'inferno! Posso vedere l'imperador del doloroso regno?"
Translation: see Dante Inferno, Canto 33, line 107.
"Help me, Roland! We have arrived at the nethermost circle of hell. I can see the emperor of the doleful kingdom."
The narrator intervenes.
"Do not ask, dear reader, how chilled and faint he became, for I do not write it, since all words fail. Mahogany did not die, and he did not remain alive. Think now for thyself, if thou hast any wit, what he became, denied both death and life."
What Mahogany saw was an enormous raven buried waist-deep in ice. The raven had three faces on one head and enormous wings which he flapped, chilling the water. When he saw that Mahogany had brought the cluster of grapes, souvenir of that tender time of love, the raven's heart melted, and his six eyes streamed with tears that ran down and dripped into the bloody foam. Mahogany offered him three grapes.
"Thank you, thank you, thank you," he said, plopping the fruit into his mouths. The red juice squirted and flared on his beaks. One grape led to another, and...
No, 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 that would be too foul.
A door opened to the right of the bird.
Videmus nunc ante face ad faciem, thought Mahogany as he walked in.
Translation: we see now, face to face.
There she was, Adelphine,
just as she had been, walking in the Champs-Élysées. Mahogany circled around her like a celestial body, roaming the seasons of the stars, and it seemed her breath was the whisper of the spheres, and her hair sprinkled sparks on the sable of the sky.
The narrator intervenes.
What? What is this? What pompous outpouring of purple prose? Mahogany was like a celestial body, roaming the seasons of the stars? Adelphine's breath was the whisper of the spheres, and her hair sprinkled sparks on the sable of the sky? What overexcited wine has washed through your veins, taking you beyond the bounds of even yourself? Though it is true that in vino veritas, this is neither the time nor the place for a drunken bacchanal.
Dear reader, just critic and touchstone that tests the mettle of my work, I kneel before you now in shame on both knees, with one hand covering my eyes and the other my mouth. And I promise I will spare the manner and give the conversation, real or unreal as it may be, in its most artless and honest form.
Back to the text. Hi, said Mahogany.
Hi, said Adelphine.
I've been looking for you, said Mahogany.
I know, said Adelphine.
I need your help, said Mahogany.
With what?
With life.
How can I help? She asked.
I need to know how I can go on alone, he said.
Alone? She said.
You are never alone. Remember what I said before?
You called me a common shrub? Said Mahogany.
No, I said that your essence and the essence of the universe are one. You are the earth and the heavens and the earths of the heavens.
I am, said Mahogany.
You are, said Adelphine.
So I am a shrub, said Mahogany.
Just then, rosy-fingered dawn streamed through the bedroom window and planted a seed of trust in Mahogany's afflicted heart.
Footnote.
Note that there is absolutely no similarity whatsoever between this dialogue and the famous lines of Goethe from Faust, Part 1, Forest and Cavern, lines 4 through 17.
All that I asked for, you gave me. You taught me in deepest heart to gaze, to seek as in the bosom of a friend, beholding thus the train of living things, and learning to perceive my very brothers in the sky and stream and in the silent glade, or in times of trouble to shelter me. You lead my steps to where I may meet my soul, and all the heart of wonder in my spirit stands revealed.
It is clear that the author has intentionally avoided any similarity so as not to reveal the fact that he has, in fact, plagiarized the Goethe passage word for word.